When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is it fair to say she kind of went through her hoe era?
My wife was kind of behind that whole storyline because she writes for the show.
Because she's a writer on the show, yes.
And plays my ex-wife in the show, Caroline. Mm-hmm. And she calls it a trampage. And I went on a trampage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Awardist, where we are chatting with the actors, creators, and more who are contenders this year and breaking down the state of the 2024 Emmys race. I'm Entertainment Weekly executive editor Jared Hall, and she's back, y'all. Joining me again this week is EWTV critic Kristen Baldwin. Hello, Kristen. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am fantastic. We have a real, I think, race on our hands this year. Your predictions are already out, which we've covered here for drama, comedy, limited series, limited or anthology. I guess I'll get in the full title. and your predictions are out for the main acting categories. We're going to cover those on this week's episode of the podcast. But before we get into that, I want to let everyone know who our special guest is on today's episode. Legit, this woman, pretty much everything that comes out of her mouth makes me laugh. I think she is just one of the funniest people on the planet, and I love her character so much on the comedy series Girls 5 Eva. Our guest is Paula Pell. I love her so much. She is so daggone funny. She's one of those people who, to me, has... like she's not embarrassed by anything she does or says. Like, she's so committed, and it really, I think, comes through in her comedy delivery.
Well, yeah. And she, yeah, you wouldn't, she seems like so sweet and just kind of like, you know, this almost unassuming person, but then she's this big, bold personality who, will just flat out, you know, do the most outrageous things, you know, with a smile and just doesn't even flinch. So yeah, love her.
Yeah, not at all. I'm going to ask her about that. If she, like, what in comedy scares her? If anything, does she get timid by anything? And maybe it's been a long road to get to that point of comedy confidence, I guess I'll call it. We'll find out.
Let's find out.
Yeah, like I said, that interview is coming up a little later. But before that, and before Kristen and I get into those acting predictions, I want to make sure all of you listening here know that we have a phone line where you can call in, leave us a message or question about an interview, about predictions, whatever it might be related to what you're hearing here. And FYI, we might play those during an episode. So here is that phone number to call in, 657-799-1566. 657-799-1566. You can also get that number from the description of our podcast, wherever you are listening. All right. So as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, Kristen dished out her predictions for nominees in drama, comedy, and limited series. This week, we are diving into the acting categories. We're specifically going to focus on the lead categories because otherwise that'd be a lot of categories and we'd be here all day. So we will cover supporting in another episode, but for this week, we are leaning into the lead acting category. So, Kristen, how about we start with drama? We'll bring the drama and start with the lead actress contenders. Who are your, well, we're going with six nominees, because there were six last year. Worth mentioning that, as we've talked about on previous episodes, Succession is, of course, not part of the mix this year. Sarah Snook previously occupied one of those spots. The Last of Us, there's no new season, so we don't have Bella Ramsey. House of the Dragon does not have a new season eligible this year. And of course, The White Lotus, they occupied all the supporting categories, so they didn't affect a lead anyway. But point being, there are a lot of contenders, previous contenders, who are not part of the mix. So without further ado, who are your six for lead actress in a drama?
All right. Well, in no particular order, just order of fabulosity. They're all equally fabulous.
Yes.
Imelda Staunton for The Crown. Carrie Coon, woohoo!
Yeah.
Totally biased for The Gilded Age. Emma Stone for The Curse. Maya Erskine for Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Jennifer Aniston for The Morning Show. And Juliette Binoche for The New Look.
All right, some interesting picks here. I want to start with Imelda Staunton because she, for she, like all the stars of this show, they all got two seasons each. For season five, she was not nominated. I think that might be a product of, like we said, there were so many other contenders.
Right.
I can't imagine a world where she's not nominated for season six. She was, I think she also had a lot more to do in season six, and I thought she was just great.
And it was the final season and, you know, it, she was had to play it or at least part of it with, you know, we all know that the in real life, her character, the woman behind her character passed away. And so there was that sort of pressure of giving her that send off. And I do think she did a great job. And also, like, you know, she's just I think it's an easy nomination for voters because you know, they do have a little more flexibility this year, but she's a familiar name.
Yeah. And worth noting also the previous two queens, Claire Foy and Olivia Colman, also did win the Emmy for their portrayals of Queen Elizabeth II. As it goes, there are two lead actress contenders for The Morning Show. Reese Witherspoon is the other one, but you do not have her in here right now. Do you think there's a chance there'll be double nominees from that show?
Yeah, I mean, I will say, and while I do, you know, really try to make honest predictions, I also do a little bit of, there's a dash of advocacy in these early predictions. And, you know, it's I'm trying to manifest a nomination for Maya Erskine, who I think is great and is really in the running for Mr. and Mrs. Smith. But I think it's possible that should somebody drop out, it might be her and Reese goes in there. I also just, you know, look, I love The Morning Show. It's like wonderful trash, like super crazy, you know, melodrama. I just don't think that necessarily this season, I don't know, I guess it wasn't a season where I was really wowed by her performance. I'm always more interested, I think, in the more outlandish characters. But, you know, I think she's got a shot. I also think Rosario Dawson could get in there for Ahsoka. Yeah. You just never know. So, and, you know, there's still some shows that have yet to premiere who have just started that have some, you know, that could, for example, I really loved Ella Purnell in Fallout. People know her from Yellowjackets, so I would love to see her in the mix as well.
Yeah. Emma Stone is an interesting one because, as Patrick and I talked about here last week, she could be one of the very few to win an Oscar and an Emmy in the same year. Do you think? Do you think because of all the momentum that she had early in the year, do you think that could play into just even her winning? I think she'll definitely be nominated, but how do you think that could play into then the final voting?
It is interesting because this, you know, The Curse was an absolutely bizarre and very divisive show, but, you know, she got sort of universal kudos for her performance. I think when it comes down to it, it is something where people are either going to want to give it to Imelda because it's the final season of The Crown. You know, I definitely think the momentum that she has from Oscar season certainly will get her on the ballot. And, but I think it would, for now, I feel like she's a long shot to actually win, but a lot could happen, I guess, between now and then. You know, people love her and she, you know, people, she's great when she's out on a press tour. So it's possible. And she and Nathan Fielder are particularly funny together. But I think when it comes down to it, this quirky, probably one-off show, as great as her performance is, you know, voters may feel that they want to honor something a little more traditional.
Mm, that's a fair word. Yes. Okay. So I last thing before we move on to lead actor, I want to note, because you said something interesting. You think voters are going to go for Imelda. At this point, do you think she's the front runner?
I do, but I also know that the front runner will can and will change multiple times between now and then. I think it really depends on, just campaigning and, right. and visibility and word of mouth. But yeah, I think if I had to pick right now, as of this mm-hmm. moment, I think it would go to Imelda, but that is, you know, I may not be saying that in 2 months
right.
time.
Right. Yeah. Yes. A lot could certainly change. All right. Moving on to lead actor in a drama series. A few minutes ago when I mentioned, you know, of course, Succession is not part of the race. I think this category is where we will really feel that because there's no Brian Cox, mm-hmm. no Jeremy Strong, no Kieran Culkin. So who are your six picks for lead actor in a drama?
All right, we've got Gary Oldman, Slow Horses. Yeah. I think his time has come. Dominic West, The Crown. Donald Glover, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Tom Hiddleston for Loki. Idris Elba for Hijack. And Walton Mother Effing Goggins for Fallout.
That is his on his birth certificate. That's his middle name.
Yes.
Now I'm just really curious what is on the birth certificate. We'll find out. This is a really interesting mix. I mean, a couple returning slow horses. This is season three. Of course, Dominic West, you know, his second season for The Crown. And Loki is returning. But it's so nice to see new names. I will say that much.
Oh, I love it. You know, we're happy that Succession happened, but it is really nice to see a category have so much turnover. And by the way, there are so many other people who could be in this mix right now.
You want to run through those names? Because it's a list.
I mean, it's a lot. Colin Farrell for Sugar. He's great. The show is bizarre, but I enjoyed it. Nathan Fielder, again, for The Curse. Ben Mendelsohn for The New Look, Morgan Spector for The Gilded Age, Timothy Oliphant for Justified City Primeval, Adrian Brody for Winning Time, Rise of the Lakers Dynasty. So yeah, I mean, this is, I have confidence in my picks, but I also know that one or more of them could be replaced by one of these other very worthy contenders. So it's exciting right now to have something new and not one show dominating the category.
Right. Yeah. Indeed. Okay, let's move on to the comedy category, shall we? Starting with lead actress in a comedy. Last year, there were five nominees, so we are going to stick with five for now.
All right, so we're going to go with Quinta Brunson, Abbott Elementary, Selena Gomez, Only Murders in the Building, Jean Smart from Hacks, Io Edebiri from The Bear, and Devery Jacobs from Reservation Dogs. This is the year. It's going to happen. It's, right, people?
Devery's
so just
get
don't even mess with me. It's happening.
I know you and a lot of people at EW are fully behind this. It's the final chance for Reservation Dogs.
Yeah.
And the rest of the town, the industry, needs to pay attention here because there's just such fantastic work done
and
on this series.
I will say I'm not the only person, you know, seeing her in this mix. Like, this is real. I think there is so much reverence for this show and realizing that this is the last time. And she had a great arc this season. Laura, you know, met her father, played by Ethan Hawke. That was an incredible episode. There was just a lot for her to do. And it was, I just love that show. I miss it so much already. Mm.
And she was doing a lot of work behind the scenes as well. She was writing and she was, so she was pulling double, triple duty like Ms. Brunson here. So, Selena Gomez, she missed out on the first two seasons of that show. Do you do think this is finally her time? She'll get in there?
I think there's just some room.
Fair.
And look, you know, she seems like a lovely young woman. I don't find the show funny, but I know that people like it and seem to like her performance. I think this
people,
is one
I'm
where
people, my hand is up. Yeah,
I see you, people named Jared. And I just think she's it's one of those things where like there's finally some room in this category, and so you know why not? So yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Well, here is what I think is wildly fascinating about this category is that Jean Smart won for the first two seasons of Hacks. Mm-hmm. Quinta Brunson won last year. Jean was not eligible because there was not a new season of Hacks. And Io Edebiri won supporting for season one of The Bear, but now she is in lead. I have no idea what to make of this category this year.
I know. It's really interesting because, you know, I do think she deserves to be in lead, and I think that's great. And, you know, they did literally just give her the award in January of this year, you know. So if I'm a voter and I'm just not sure, they may default and go back to Quinta, but it's just, you know, it's a great mix. So I wouldn't really be angry at any of these winners. A couple of other names that are bubbling up, Kristen Wiig in Palm Royale and Maya Rudolph in Loot. You know, I think Loot, people love Maya Rudolph, but I don't think Loot has enough of a real presence in terms of like the zeitgeist, but who knows? Palm Royale, personally, I found very painfully unfunny and I mean, that doesn't mean she won't get nominated, but it's just not one that I'm particularly excited about.
Got it. Okay. Lead actor in a comedy series. So this is another one where we have some openings because Ted Lasso is out of the mix. Mm-hmm. Barry is out of the mix. I'm sure there's something else I'm forgetting, but five nominees again right now we are going with because that's what we had last year. So who are your five?
My five are Jeremy Allen White, Martin Short, and Steve Martin for Only Murders in the Building, Jarrell Jerome for I'm a Virgo, It's Gonna Happen, and Larry David for the final season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay, so I feel like in some regards, we know who this winner is going to be. probably Jeremy Allen White repeating for The Bear. Who do you think could upset this category?
I mean, I want to say Jarrell Jerome because he was so great in I'm a Virgo, and he is an Emmy winner already. The power of his talent has, you know, that was for a limited series, and I believe it was supporting. I don't remember exactly, but he's really great in this, and I hope that, you know, Prime Video puts a big push behind the show because it was an extraordinary and very bonkers social satire as well as coming of age story. You know, the other thing is Larry David. It's the final season of Curb. It was not a great season, but he gets nominated pretty much every time. They could say, you know, let's give Larry a send-off award because he'll give a really funny, awkward speech. Who can say?
Mm-hmm. To that point, was someone on his way out, Kelsey Grammer's back in. he not only was, I think, nominated for every season of that show, but won for a handful as well. The new Frasier is not the old Frasier. I will say that. Kelsey, I think, is still firing on all Kelsey cylinders. Do you think I don't want to say just on name recognition, but there's a familiarity there, you know, even if people haven't had a chance to see the show, Kelsey's always great, and they may just check his name.
They could, but it's like, I cringe
even asking that question, but
I know, you know, they could, but I feel like if they're going to reflexively check the name of an old white man, it's going to be Martin Short and Steve Martin, because they've been doing that for the last, you know, several years.
Sure.
And I think also Only Murders in the Building has more respect as a comedy product than the new Frasier does. So I'm not sure that they're going to want to reward sort of this. It's not even really a revival because he's basically the only character who came back. So who knows?
Frasier 2.0.
I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility. For now, I'd just say he's in the mix.
Yeah. Well, someone else who's also in the mix, and I feel like there's a bit of brewing momentum for, is Theo James for Guy Ritchie's series, The Gentlemen. Are you on the Theo James train here? Because I know there's a lot of love for him in this show.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the show wasn't necessarily my cup of tea, but I know people really loved it, and his performance was fun. So I think he could sub in. Again, I am trying to manifest here with Jarrell yeah. Jerome,
yeah.
But I do think that slot could go to someone else. I would, you know, I'm not allowing that possibility in my mind, mm-hmm. But, you know, in the real world where voters live, it absolutely could go to him.
Yeah, in the real world. Well, really, the important thing here to note, and everything else can be edited out of this episode, Jarrell Jerome, I'm a Virgo. That's all.
Exactly. That's all we need here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to lead actress in a limited or anthology series or movie, where we talked about a couple weeks ago with this category, just the sheer number of eligible titles. This is a tough one, but who are your yeah. six?
My six are Jodie Foster for True Detective Night Country, mm-hmm. Juno Temple back in the mix for Fargo, yeah. Anna Sawai for Shogun, Brie Larson for Lessons in Chemistry, Naomi Watts for Feud, Capote versus the Swans, and Kate Winslet for The Regime.
Okay. This is an interesting one to break down because, of course, I mean, Jodie Foster, and she's fantastic.
She's so good
on this show. She's great. Kate Winslet, a previous winner in this category for Mayor of Easttown and maybe something else, I can't recall. She's certainly been nominated before. Naomi Watts, I love in Feud. Brie yeah. Larson is great in Lessons in Chemistry. Anna Sawai is just, my gosh, if people have not
so
seen
good.
Shogun,
yeah.
which I think a lot of people have because it has performed quite well for FX, she's fantastic in this. And then Juno Temple, I mean, she got to do something so different from Ted Lasso in Fargo,
yeah.
And people have got to take note of that. So I think this is a great mix of nominees. Also, though, got to mention the others who are, you know, like the outliers here. There's
yeah.
Joey King, who we've already had on the podcast. We were the lucky ones. Sofia Vergara, Griselda, Awkwafina for the movie, not a series, Quiz Lady. There's Aria Mia Liberti for All the Light We Cannot See. Uzo Aduba is in the mix. Julianne Moore. I mean, holy
mm-hmm.
cow. The star quality here is wild.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, I think it's possible that Sofia Vergara, you know, will take one of these slots. But I really, you know, I think even with the negative reviews of The Regime, people love Kate Winslet and they're going to want to put Kate Winslet in there and see her at the ceremony. So, yeah, this is always a really interesting and good category where it seems like every choice is too difficult. It's impossible to choose between all these great performers. So once again, but yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes because it is pretty unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Okay. Lead actor. This will be our last one here. Lead actor in a limited or anthology series or movie. Your picks, Kristen Baldwin.
My picks are Tom Hollander for Feud, Capote versus the Swans, Hiroyuki Sanada from Shogun, John Hamm from Fargo, Andrew Scott from Ripley, so good, Tony Shalhoub, the Emmys love him, for Mr. Monk's Last Case, and Matt Bomer for Fellow Travelers.
So Tony Shalhoub, of course, he was always in the mix for, he won for this show back in the day, and he won a couple times for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I think this might be one of the few TV movies that breaks through in the acting categories. I'm not sure really any others will, but this is another one where I couldn't tell you who I think is the front runner because there are some great performances here all around.
Yeah. And, you know, by the way, we also have Michael Douglas from Franklin, David Oyelowo from Lawman Bass Reeves, Tobias Menzies from Manhunt, Hoa Zwande from The Sympathizer, and even Benedict Cumberbatch has a miniseries coming up called Eric. So, like, there's still plenty of people who could sneak in here. But I think, you know, Hollander for sure, Sonata for sure, John Hamm, I think for sure. And honestly, Andrew Scott, people loved Ripley, except for people who can't handle black and white, but like, honestly, go touch grass. So, you know, there maybe are a couple slots, but it's going to be really hard to narrow this down.
Yeah. Yeah. The people who don't like black and white can get over it. I think every shot of that movie looks like a postcard.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Stunning. Yeah. It's stunning.
Gorgeous.
And he's great. Very conflicted, and fascinating character there. And a lot closer, by the way, if people have seen The Talent of Mr. Ripley, the movie, this is, I mean, it's quite different. It's a lot closer to the book. So if you're a fan of the book, you, I think, will enjoy this, but yeah, this is another one. I don't know where to go with it because, you know, last year we had that surefire, like, who was going to beat Beef?
Yeah, exactly.
So this year, I love that there's a little bit of, I don't know, like, our hands are kind of raised. What's it going to be? Where's
really it going to go? And I think that's kind of the theme for this whole season, this whole Emmy season so far. And I like that. You know, I like not feeling like everything's sort of a foregone conclusion.
Indeed. Well, we're going to continue to talk about these nominations, give updates as the season progresses, because as you've said, Kristen, things will shift, things will change. We still have a couple series to debut. Sometimes that has zero impact. Sometimes it has a lot of impact. So we will certainly keep track of that. And for all of you listening, do be sure to check out Kristen's full predictions at EW.com. As I said, also including the supporting categories for drama, comedy, and limited series, or TV movie acting categories, and the big categories. And we'll have more predictions coming up for the reality categories and perhaps some others. So EW.com is your home for all of that. All right, we are going to take a quick break. But before we do that, I want to remind you of the phone number where you can call in with your comments or questions. That is 657-799-1566. 657-799-1566. All right, I'm bracing myself. I'm so excited. Coming up, Girls 5 Eva star Paula Pell. The awardist will be right back. Welcome back to The Awardist. Folks, I cannot begin to tell you how frickin' giddy I am right now to welcome this week's guest. She is legit one of my favorite comedy actresses. I have died and been resurrected only to die again at the stuff that comes out of her mouth on the Peacock-turned-Netflix comedy series Girls 5 Eva. It's Paula Pell.
I've never made a man so happy in my life.
I'm happy to be on the receiving end of that. Seriously, the stuff on Girls 5 Eva is so funny. But before we get into that, happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I just turned 61. I've kind of the secret is out about my age, because I've never really in press said my age too much, because I'm a little older than the other ladies and we're kind of supposed to be a little bit more contemporaries with each other. But I guess I've been using good creams or lotions.
I would never even have come close to 61 if you asked me to guess. So congrats to you. It was this past Monday, right? What did you do to celebrate?
This past Monday, I actually went the week before. I had gone to SNL to write Aunt Linda with Kristen Wiig. And that was such a fun, nostalgic, great weekend with all my old friends. And then one of the things that I really wanted for my birthday was to see Chris Stapleton perform. And then I looked up on the board in Lauren's office and he was the music guest this week. So I told Janine, I know I was just there, but I said, could we go and have a little double, you know, two night date in New York City? Cause we don't live there and, you know, we're a couple hours away. And I was like, could we just go and be like, you know, just audience members, not sitting in the audience, but just hanging backstage and going and listening to him. And it was so fun. But I did remember that when you do that show and you're working it, even if I've not been there for years and I come back and write for somebody, if you're working it, you have immediate and constant adrenaline the entire weekend. And then on Sunday, you just collapse. But I always access this like power bank of adrenaline. And whenever I have people visit and they come to the show, I always say, like, take a 2-hour nap at like 7, like take a 2-hour nap at 8, because you're going to get there at 11 and you're going to be like, oh my God, the after party doesn't even start till 1, you know? Uh-huh. And I did not do that. We ran around New York all day. We, you know, we went shopping. I got my nails done, all this stuff. And then we got there to the party. We went to the show and then we got to the party and it was like,
like power down feeling. Dive. Yeah.
And it was a very crowded, like really happening party. So we lasted for about an hour and a half. We did pretty good. But I was like, damn it, that nap, if you're not working, you don't have that terror in your soul, that adrenaline that you have when you're working it, because it's so live and so high stakes. And so like, you know, everyone is just jacked up. And
right.
Back in the day, it was called cocaine. But now, even in my era, we were so boring drug wise. We did not do anything much except, you know, maybe some weed and booze. But I forgot how like you really have to get in that zone to stay up for that party.
But it sounds like a fun birthday. I'm glad you brought up SNL and Kristen, because I wanted to ask about Aunt Linda. Do you know if there were any plans to revive like any of her other past characters beyond Aunt Linda for Weekend Update? And were there any jokes that got cut?
I think that, you know, Kristen coming in this time, because she's so ungodly talented and funny and brilliant at that show, that I think she was really excited about, you know, really coming in with some new sketches and not just kind of lay back on her laurels of all these recurring things, even though they're fantastic. And of course, her Target ladies all over television on Target ads right now. And my best friend, James Anderson, wrote those with her, and you know, those are just perfection. And so we're getting a good dose of Target lady. And I think she just wanted to have fun and kind of experience the new writers and newer writers and newer performers. And I thought she did such a great job. It was like fantastic. Kind of delightful, because when you see the people come back that have a lot of recurring, if all they do is recurring, then you kind of, it does feel like almost like you're watching reruns of them. And when you watch them take the risk and take the jump of doing new stuff, and then you see how good they are at those, at that sketch playing, it feels like you're watching them again on the show, where you're like, oh, they're on the show again, you know? So I loved it. It was really fun.
It was a great episode. Were there any Aunt Linda jokes that you guys had to cut?
Oh, yes. We did cut a few. I'm trying to think. Oh shit! I should have my little script here. I might think of one before the end of this, but we did trim, because everything was very packed, because so many things that she did were so funny, so they were over time wise, like they always are, and we needed to take about 20 seconds out of Aunt Linda, so we lost a couple things. One thing, I feel like it was one other joke about the bear, but I'll try. We forgot how much we hadn't written it in 14 years, we figured out. Yeah. And we forgot how much we love writing it, because the combination of someone that's really irritable and also confused is so freaking fun.
Yes.
It's like,
yes.
Because I feel like I'm slowly turning into Aunt Linda, where I'll just say to Janine, like, are there no iPods at this Apple store? There's no iPods anymore? And she's like, Paula, there haven't been iPods in like 10 years. They don't even have them, though. They don't have like just the standard iPod. And I did something when we were starting the press for the premiere of this season of Girls 5 Eva. I said something to the girls that I think they all fell actually on the ground. They were laughing so hard at me, but I said to them that morning I was walking around here and I said something about, I did some interview about pop music, about like of the day of the 90s and pop music. And all of a sudden I just went, pop music, popular music. And my wife fell over the kitchen counter. Then I told them and they fell off the couch. They were like, are you kidding me? You did not know.
Light bulbs came on. And
and then I said to them, and you know what? Hula hoops are hula hoops because when you're doing them, you're doing the hula. And they were like, now see, I didn't know that one. And I said, there's always something. There's always something.
Yeah, I don't think I realize that either because it's, I believe, also spelled a little differently. But, oh, gosh, that's funny. Yes. Aunt Linda is just a gem. But one more question about SNL before we move on. I know the two of you didn't formally work together on the show at the same time because his last season was 20 and your first was 21. But I wonder if, suspect, if you and Chris Farley knew each other and what you think about this new biopic with Paul Walter Hauser playing him and Josh Gad directing.
I actually have not seen anything. I haven't seen it. I will say I'm not professing not to see it, but I do sometimes. It is hard when you're so embedded in that place for, you know, I was there for 18 plus years. It's very hard to watch representation of the show or representation of the stars of the show played by other people, just because it's such a specific, weird little place and yet very big and very iconic. But it does, it is a weird feeling. It's like, it's almost like if somebody writes something about your family and they don't, haven't lived with your family. And then you're just like, that's not how my dad talks. But I'm sure, because I know that actor is very good, and I'm sure that he's fantastic in it. But
and Lorne Michaels is involved, so that helps. I think
that it's going to be very, very much full of love for Chris because he was beloved, and you know, I know him just from hosting when he would host, and because I came in '95 and he was already gone, but he just was like just a ball of joy. And it was truly a tragedy to just watch somebody struggling where you're just like, oh, that, you know, that joyful tornado of talent is just getting somehow dimmed by, you know, outside forces of drugs and stuff. So it was really, really sad to see him, and know that he was young and amazing. And I mean, I'm glad the world had him as long as they did, but I am very interested in seeing it and seeing. I don't like when I know that there are ones that are scathing, you know, because for the reason, I know this one is not and Lauren's involved, but, when they're, I know Josh is a huge fan, a huge fan of Chris. And so I think it's going to be reverential in those wonderful heart killing ways. But I don't like the ones that try to be little gotcha things about SNL. And just because I'm so internally embedded in it all these years, I grew up there. And so I feel a little more like, you know, protective and defensive about things. Yeah,
absolutely. As you should. But like you said, I hope it's going to be reverential and a celebration of him.
And I think it will, especially if Lauren doesn't get involved in anything involved in SNL unless it is like really done right. So I'm excited about that.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, to the matter at hand, Girls 5 Eva, what I said while introducing you, I mean very genuinely, the stuff that you say on that show as Gloria, I find to be an absolute riot. I feel like there are a lot of different types of comedy that tickle my fancy, which now that I'm saying that phrase, I don't know if it's one we should use anymore, but I'm not going to retract it. But
tickling your own fancy. There's consent.
Tickling my own fancy. Exactly.
That's right. That's right.
But Girls 5 Eva, I feel like, is really in my sweet spot because it is like, it's absurdist humor. It's skewering. It's intelligently dumb humor. It's not easy to do dumb humor well.
Amen.
It's self-deprecating. Yes. It's dirty. I'm curious, what are your favorite types of comedy?
My favorite type of comedy, well, the characters I always wrote at SNL and then furthermore after that are what I call joyful losers, is I love an underdog just like Meredith does. And she's always written us as these beloved underdog kind of characters that you're rooting
Meredith Scardino,
for.
The show creator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Meredith Scardino. Yeah. You're writing, I mean, you're rooting for people that are actively messing their own path up. Yeah. And but yet their heart's in it and they're really trying, but they just can't get out of their own way, or they're, you know, they're fearful. It's all the emotions that you can recognize in yourself when you go, why can't I make this happen in my life? And then you watch and you're like, oh, I know these people, they are me. But my favorite thing is hard laughs with like tearful moments. Like that's always been my favorite thing in anything is, you know, back in the day, like, you know, all in the families and in Good Times and all that era. And then all the Roseanne era, all those eras of those type of shows that would have the guts to go full spectrum of super big, giant laughs, physical, really funny stuff, but grounded. So it's not insane. And then, have these moments that are quiet. And I feel like Meredith has become, and even started out in the pilot, started out masterfully mixing the absurd, insane, kind of big 30 Rock, like crazy things happening, crazy characters, amazing words. And then there'll just be a simple moment where we're all looking at each other and we're like, we want to do this. We want this. This lights us up. Like we're older ladies and this is going to be our new beginning. This is, we're starting over. And then that makes you care and it makes you want to watch it and it makes you want them to have success and it makes you laugh when they don't. And so it's really my favorite kind of tone. It is, you know, I love what she's struck in the middle. And I'm a huge theater nerd. So to do musical theater, like, I mean, we're doing popular music. We're doing musical theater, but more, you know, pop music, theater type songs and hilarious songs. And then there'll be that one or two killers that Sarah writes for the season that just, I mean, that end of the finale, I won't, you know, spoil it, but there's a song called The Medium Time in the finale of this season. Please watch it. It's like the most beautiful song. It's like straight from, you could 100% download it and play it on every mix of every pop song you love. And we couldn't stop crying when we were singing and we're harmonizing, which is one of my favorite activities other than like rescuing animals. And so it's always a symphony of all my favorite things doing it. And I don't have to write it.
Because it comes
to me, and I don't mean have to, because I've been very blessed to be able to write things over my life and things I love. But writing is really, really hard, and it's worrisome, and it's the adult in the room that has to worry, and look, you know. And the actors are the kids, you know. They get out and play, and so I really love in the show being able to not be sitting listening to everything with a discerning eye of like, should we cut that? Do we need that? Is this too long? How much is the budget? Like, I don't have to think of any of it. I just am like, put my makeup and hair on and let Gloria, you know, let her rip.
Yeah. And some of those fabulous costumes that they put you in, which are also just so funny as well. Our TV critic and I were talking earlier in this episode of the podcast about how we feel like there is a fearlessness to your performance that there's a commitment, and that you don't seem to be embarrassed by the things you do or say. I think I use the phrase with her, comedy confidence. Is that something you had to work for, or in some form that timing and delivery, your comedy skills have always kind of been innately part of you?
Thank you, by the way, because that's to me a very, very wonderful, goal is to have comedy confidence. And kind of abandon. I feel like I was always a ham. I was always in school. I was very much a people pleaser. I wanted to be good grades. I wanted to be the teacher's pet. I wanted to have, you know, friends and be involved in things. But I also, if I had an opportunity, my dad is the same way. He's hilarious. My mom and dad and my sister are also funny. But like, if there is an opportunity for just a walkthrough with a prop or like a weird hat or, you know, with the original real Wine Country trip that we took of me just walking through topless with like a cornucopia from the Airbnb on my head singing, I don't know why I'm frightened. I know my way around here. And so I will always and have always, even as a writer at SNL in the writer's room, like I would always take an opportunity to do. Sometimes I would draw. I'm somewhat of an artist and I can draw very realistic looking eyes. And I used to draw them many years of my life, I used to draw them on paper and cut them out and put them inside my glasses and sometimes just be sitting in a meeting and just be listening to the meeting. But I just have these realistic drawn eyes on. So, you know, but I also was a person that never wanted to do it where people are going, oh, like she's on, she's always on. Like I'm very aware. I've always been very aware of like reading the mood of the room of like, is this a room that needs a little bit, like a little bit of a jolt of comedy, or is this not a time for me to take my boobs out? So I did, even back when I was performing at Disney and Universal Studios at the theme parks after college, before I got SNL, I would do very big kind of physical comedy things and also just, you know, bits with people, musical bits, and like burst into song. My coworkers at, you know, Girls Five Eva always say I'm the one that's most likely to burst into song because, you know, give me an opportunity to suddenly be singing a quiet ballad about, you know, the toilet or something. It's just I do love to just always kind of be trying to make people laugh. It's just always been, you know, my joy.
Mm-hmm. You're an improv singer, or you will think of a song that's like out in the world to relate it to.
You know, I've never had any improv training at all. Like even though I grew up just very close to Second City in Chicago, yeah. But then I moved when I was 15. So I never was an adult there. I moved to Orlando. And when I came back from college, I worked with SAC Theater, which is full of incredibly talented improv people. Most of them are in many of them are in LA now and doing great. And I did a pilot with them. And so what I always did is I would love to just write a character. You know, I loved writing a 2-page, just straight to the audience, funny character. And that's what I loved writing characters. So I was never an improv person, but I always could improv music. So if we were all pretending we were singing something, I could burst into an impromptu verse of something and be able to do that. But I think it's because when I sing, I'm kind of in a different zone. But when I'm just in a situational scene in improv, I get too in my head. I get too nervous. I'm not going to be able to do it well. So I've done it very seldom in my life. I've never been a person that, like, you know, was the guest at some improv group. I just never did it. And all my friends are so brilliant at it that I just look at them and I'm like, I don't know if I could do it, but give me a song and I can sing you that song.
That's a true talent, I do got to say. In season 3, Gloria is, I mean, we've certainly seen this in seasons 1 and 2, but season 3, I feel like it's really driven home that Gloria is really looking for a genuine connection. But yes. In the midst of that, is it fair to say she kind of went through her hoe era?
Oh, well, my wife was kind of behind that whole storyline because she writes for the show.
Because she's a writer on the show, yes.
And plays my ex-wife in the show, Caroline. Mm-hmm. And she calls it a trampage, and that I went on a trampage. And what I love about it is the whole. If it was just Gloria being, you know, hoeing it out, it wouldn't feel as authentic as it is that she does and immediately falls in love with every single person, you know. Which I totally right. did when mm-hmm. I was in my youth. I would go out, have one nighter with somebody, and the next day I was writing in my journal, like, their eyelashes are, you know, I can't wait to stare at their eyelashes for the rest of my life. I was like ready to have them move in. And so it's, but I love that she's seeking. What I also think she's seeking is like, she feels the clock ticking of she's getting everything in order to make sure that she's happy. She wants to make sure that, so she did this big leap and worked so hard to get Caroline back. Now she has Caroline back, but then she's like, oh, wait a minute. I've only been with you. What if I get a year into this? And I'm like, I still have not lived my life. So I do love that she was bold enough to just say like, yeah. And you know, I'll come back to you. And then she said, you know, gave me the finger and I left. But then when I come back, it's such a funny reveal of who she's with.
Yes, it sure is. Oh, that scene, though, it broke my heart a little bit.
Yeah, and Gloria and Caroline always find their way back to each other. So I'm sure, you know, if we are lucky to and thrilled to get another season of this, I think Caroline and I, that would be a really funny thing to see. Like, if I, you know, if I bring someone by that I'm seeing that I'm, like, paying $500 a week for, just saying, pretend you're with me, you know.
Oh. Huh. Uh-huh. I hope Meredith is listening to this and they're picking up ideas. I do got to say, though, I think it is really impressive what the show was able to accomplish story-wise in just six episodes this season.
That's a short amount of time to have an arc for every character. I know from, you know, writing movies where there's like six characters where you're trying to get track the arc of every single freaking character and then have a satisfying ending for every character. You're like, oh my God. And when we found out it was going to be six last year, we're like, oh man, that's going to be it's a half hour. It's less than a half hour, you know? So it is really brilliant the way they wove that together. And I don't know if it's weaved or wove. I don't know. I wish I was a writer in new words.
I feel like Merriam-Webster will tell us either is okay.
And just hear like a little ding.
That'd be amazing. One day it will happen. But between between Gloria's Trampage and befriending this Harry Styles pop star type character. I mean, she has a fox that she's caring for in one episode. Like, is there a season three moment or episode that you just really particularly loved getting to sink your teeth into and are proud of?
Well, I have to say that storyline with him, I loved so much because he was, first of all, just as a human being, he was dreamy outside and inside, like deep inside dreamy too, like amazing guy. And he was so fun and so funny. And we had such a great time with him, but it broke my heart in such good ways of how she, you know, there's a line that she, when she flashes back to him, in her embarrassment, realizing it's Gray Holland, this iconic pop star. And she's like, oh my God, I gave him my autograph, and she's mortified. And then she has that flashback where she says to him, you know, it's dream stuff. You wouldn't understand. And it's just so heartbreaking that she thinks she's this big star among this trucker that she's just talking to and becoming friends with. And then it's heartbreaking to see the other girls trying to get her to kind of betray herself and just want him for what he's available for is stardom. Mm-hmm. And I loved playing those because they were kind of good dramatic moments of being able to say, like, I care about you and I swear I'm not just using you. And his betrayal is so good. He gets those tears in his eyes and everything. The other part that I really loved that I also will say that, I mean, everything is collaborative writing on that show, but like, I know Janine kind of contributed this idea because she used to do stand up and she would go to like the belly of the country in terms of like not big gay representation. And she'd go to certain states where she'd be like, oh boy, this show's going to be, you know, cause she's just definitely had like a lot of content in her stand up that was about her and she was gay. And then she would look out and there'd be these, you know, this two rows of lesbians like going, woo, like they're out there. And they drove three hours to get there because they heard, you know, that they were having a gay stand-up night. And so, you know, this whole storyline I have where I go and we're in, I think, Texas or I can't remember. And just.
The Beaumont episode?
Beaumont, yes, and just like where they show up, where my people show up,
yes,
you know, and I call myself hospice, but don't write it down because it spells hospice, which is one of my favorite jokes in the entire season.
Hysterical. I had to pause the TV because I was laughing.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Yeah, John Mahome, a really funny writer that's on the show. He wrote that joke, but that's the kind of joke you just lay in bed and go, oh, I wish I would have thought of that one, you know?
And it circles back later in the season too. There's if I recall correctly, there's a throwback to it.
Yes. But I just love the idea of finding your people, no matter where you're at, you're like, they will find you. And she's really touched of that. They'll find you. And, And the caretaking with the animals, of course, is completely derived from my own life, because Janine and I are constantly, like, you know, finding some creature or adopting another dog or a cat. And but I think she is in this season trying to break from her, like, disabling caretaking part. Like, she's trying to put herself first, or at the very least second, as opposed to 10th. And she's like, I'm going to go find joy and self-esteem, like, you know, find out people that think I'm fantastic. And that's where the Trampage comes in. Mm-hmm.
But hey, that though, putting yourself first, though, that's an important storyline. Like, that's a lot of people should pay attention to that.
Oh, I think that, I'm a recovering and still sometimes active caretaker in my own life and among all the people I love. And, you know, my therapist used to call it, she used to say, when you're a codependent person and too much of a caretaker, you pull up to a gas station on fumes, your car is barely on fumes, and you put the money in and you fill up someone else's tank and they drive away. Yes. You watch them drive away and you wave and you're like, now I'm still empty, you know? So, I do love that she, this season is like, and she even calls herself out at the end and is terrified that she messed up their journey to the end of, like, I was so selfish, you know, because some people call it self-care and some people call it selfish, and you have to decide there's something in between that's healthy, you know?
Indeed. Yeah. I think you just made me realize I need therapy. so that's a great takeaway from this. As we kind of start to get to wrap up here, I'm curious, have you felt a difference in the show's consumption and audience interaction with its move to Netflix?
I've really felt a difference in terms of just being out in the world. Not only online, social media, just people, you know, that I know or don't know, like texting or emailing or DMing or, you know, oh my God, I just watched the season. Like, it feels very much like it's finding a lot more sets of eyes. But I also feel a lot of people out in the world, like in New York or up here where I live, or like in LA. There's never a day where somebody doesn't go, you know, the other night we were walking in New York and this person just went BPE, which is, you know, the song Big Pussy Energy. And they just went BPE. And I just laughed so hard because it's such a joy to know that it's getting out there and that people are, are watching it. And they're not only watching it. It's not like that service thing of people going, oh yeah, I saw your show. It's nice. It's like people just go, oh my God, I binged the whole thing the whole weekend. I love it so much. I'm listening to the music on Spotify. Like, it's so satisfying because we really do love making it so much that sometimes you forget when you're making something that it is actually going to be consumed. You're like, especially in single camera where you're like spending 14 hours a day just doing something and you go, okay, we did it. And you go, but oh, now we got to edit this and this is actually going to be a product. Right. And all of us in the cast have felt a pretty massive difference of just people out in the world seeing us and going, oh my God, I'm watching that show right now, or Girls Five Eva, or, you know, different ages, different people. Of course, you know, the gays are a great supportive fan base, but there's just all sorts of people, you know, they'll be just like a straight older couple that'll just be like, we are watching that show and it is a riot. It's a hoot, you know. Like somebody's uncle and aunt, you know, and then the young people, when we have young people, which we're so thrilled about getting so many young people watching it. So,
yeah, indeed. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. All three seasons, for folks who have not checked it out yet, if you haven't, shame on you. No, I'm kidding. I won't shame anyone. But it's such an easy, quick watch of all three seasons. And it is a delight. Can I tell you, though, one other character have created in the past that I would love to see more of? I was such a fan of your Quibi series, Mapleworth Murders.
It's a great joy of my life. We're at all times, John Letts and I are at all times trying to figure out how we can resurrect, find a place, like refigure it, figure out a different form of it. Like, we love it so much. It was one of the most fun things. It really taught me and reminded me, just like Hudson Valley Ballers that I did with James Anderson years ago, which we did for like $10. We did two seasons of that. And then Mapleworth had that same feeling of complete insanity, all our friends in it, and true, just hilarious, like fun, wonderful. You know, there's a moment in Mapleworth that is such a great joy to me that John Letts and I still talk about, where we wrote a thing where, you know, someone's trying to kill me and this car comes up, jumps the curb, and then I fall. And when I get up, my boobs are out completely, fully yes. topless, but I still have my trench coat on. And I go, that car nearly defrocked me. And then he takes his shirt off to put on me. And so we shot that at 2 o'clock in the morning in the back lot of Universal in LA. And we wrote it. We made ourselves do it. And when we were doing it, they had the big announcement, like no one on the set that needs to not be on the set. You know, this is the part that's going to be private, yeah. You know, and I'm just walking around with my boobs out, which I've done many, many times. The old joke I always use is my boobs are a member of SAG, but I literally am sitting there and I just look at his bare chest. And then I've got my bare chest and we just started laughing. And it was one of those times that like I could watch us in a blooper reel laughing in that moment, like for the rest of my life or the last moments of my life. I just want to watch that because that show is unbridled joy. This show feels the same way, unbridled joy.
Yeah.
But it's the only reason to do this shit. Like, don't do things that you're miserable in. Like, there are options, go find something else. Even if it's a smaller show or a smaller thing, like do something that brings you joy because life is so short. Yeah.
Was it hard doing that show with those 8-minute installments?
It was, but you know, we wrote it like three act things. So three of them would be a half hour comedy.
Sure.
So we wrote it purposely like that. So it didn't break our brain. Cause at first we were like, how do we even write that? So all we did was like first, second and third act, like it just in our heads, you know, like, and a tag at the end. So we did that. Sure. And really our aspiration after Quibi went down was to have somebody put them together in half hour, but it didn't end up happening. I mean, it's at Roku where you can still watch the short ones, but if you watch them all together, it just feels like I don't even know. Indeed. It's such a weird world now how people consume, you know, TV anyway. It's kind of like you don't even know what the proper structure is because they watch it all together anyway. So it's kind of like one long movie sometimes.
Yep, that is a great point. Well, listen, Paula, this has been a gosh darn delight. I cannot thank you enough. And
thank you so much.
As a little treat for fans, I think we should tell them that they didn't realize your boobs have been up this entire recording.
Yeah, the whole time. And it said audio only, but I made sure that Jared went on the camera just to make sure that he could check it out. But I mean, I have body paint on. I have tragedy and comedy mask painted on one of each because I'm a theater person. But
I should have gotten mine out for you. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, guys can walk around with them out and nobody cares.
That's true.
I have never been ashamed. It's one of my few things that I'm very proud of. My hair and my teeth and my boobs.
Hey, there you go. That's quite a trifecta right there. Well, listen, I genuinely can't thank you enough. This has been a true pleasure, and congrats on the success of the show.
Thank you so
much. I hope to see and talk to you soon.
And anybody listening, watch it on Netflix. You can watch all three seasons, and it's so fun to binge it.
Yes, the best way.
Thank you.
Here's one thing that I think is super fascinating about Paula is that She has a very recognizable voice. She has that Illinois Chicago. And so when I hear, even if I'm not watching, I hear her and I will like immediately like, where is she? What is it I need to watch? Like, where's the TV screen where this voice is coming from? She's done so many things that I Mapleworth Murders, like we mentioned the Quibi series. I need so much more of that show because it's like her spoof on Murder, She Wrote. It's just
and honestly, it was on Quibi, so like, of course no one saw it. We need to put it somewhere where the world can enjoy it. And who knows who owns that? That's such a great question, like in terms of Where did the rights go for your series?
Well, now you have me wondering, is it also on a lot of stuff went to Roku channel. I'm pulling that up here very quickly to find out. You can. Apparently it is on Roku channel. So you can watch those little 8-minute installments.
She needs to do another series for another season for Roku.
Yeah, Roku. Give us more. And of course, you hear her on Big Mouth. She was a standout on AP Bio. I loved her so much in the movie Wine Country. So to me, she's just always one of those. She's a scene stealer. She knows how to make the most of even small roles and a short amount of time. She's very impactful as a comedic actress.
Yes. And we want more of her.
For sure. I'll take it wherever I can get it. By the way, you can watch all seasons of Girls 5 Eva. It is now on Netflix, not on Peacock. So do yourself a favor, catch up on that show because I just love her so much. And it's a really, I think, outstanding ensemble of female comedic actresses at work there. That one is worth checking out. I'll give you guys that phone number, by the way, one more time in case you have any comments, questions about that Paula Pell interview. 657-799-1566. Feel free to call and leave us a comment, a question, and we may play it right here on the podcast. Kristen, that is it for this week's episode. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I have to ask you, though, I'm wondering, did you ever dial into a radio show trying to, like, win tickets or anything
Absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
I have very vivid memories of trying to, like, speed dial to win Duran Duran tickets.
Yes.
Didn't happen.
I grew up in the Louisville, Kentucky market. So, you know, we always had concerts coming through.
Yeah.
And I had the 99.7 WDJX. I had them on speed dial. Yep. I had the phone number saved.
So maybe someday we'll be able to do a live call in and give somebody tickets.
Oh, some tickets feel like to something. We got to figure that out. A live call in. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be fun.
Oh, goodness. Well, meantime, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to The Awardist. If you like what you're hearing here, follow, rate the podcast, and leave us an award-winning review on Apple Podcasts. And to keep the conversation with us going, you can follow Entertainment Weekly on all socials. We are at EW on Twitter and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag me at Jared Hall. We will see you back here next week.
The Awardist is an Entertainment Weekly podcast hosted and produced by Jared Hall and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Thanks for listening.
All voicemails become the property of The Awardist. By leaving a voicemail, you give Entertainment Weekly the absolute right to edit, broadcast, display, or otherwise use the voicemail, in whole or in part, on The Awardist podcast without restriction. Voicemails may be edited for content and/or to anonymize the identity of the caller at our discretion. All information submitted in the voicemail is subject to our privacy policy, available at EW.com.